Well, all of this rehabilitation services that we have been talking about this morning is designed with helping us to acquire the skills so that we can become employable. So I have asked that Dick Davis from Blind Inc., as well as Byron Harden from IC Music LLC, come in and talk to us about, A, what are the basics of applying for jobs, and B, for in Byron's case, to talk to us about careers in audio production with the use of adaptive technology. So here they are, Dick and Byron.
Okay, thank you. This is Dick. I'm going to start out, in addition to being... I love that. I love that. I think that's really, really good. In addition to being associate director and basically careers guy for Blind Incorporated, I'm also the chair of the NFB National Employment Committee. And so people know me through two things. And so I'm going to talk about getting a job, which involves going out and getting one of the things. And Byron, who is the guru on self-employment, is going to talk about how to be an entrepreneur, how to start small business. And I think also his school, which I think is a wonderful educational opportunity for people, which I just learned about today and which I think I want to market, more, because it's really a great, opportunity for people. Okay, first of all, I think for you to get a job, there's got to be a mental shift. And so in my comparatively short period of time, hopefully I can bring about that mental shift in you. Well, one of the things that we say in the National Federation of the Blind is that only 30% of working age blind people are employed. And I think we have to be careful in using that figure. And the reason why I say using that figure is because if we really internalize it, it sounds really terrible. God, I've got a third of a chance of getting a job. I'm done for, and so on and so forth. And frankly, blind people engage in way too much negative self-talk. So we don't need to do that. So I want to adjust your perception slightly. Do you know what percentage of sighted people are in the labor market today in this country? Anybody? 62%. 62%. So the percentage of blind people in the labor market today is half of the percentage of sighted people. Now, that's not good, admittedly. 50% is not as good as 100%. But it's not as terrible as 30% either. So I think when we look at our statistics, now the 30% figure is great if we want to get more money for rehab, if we want to get people to support the National Federation of the Blind isn't as terrible, et cetera. But from a practical standpoint, the odds just get up. So now you can say that here in Illinois, the head of the NFB Employment Committee just knocked 20% off the unemployment rate of blind people. Now, obviously, that these are just statistics. And statistics, as we know, there's an old saying, lies, damn lies, and statistics. And statistics are kind of like that. You can make anything that you want out of statistics. And nobody here wants to be a statistic, or if you're going to be a statistic, you want to be the employed statistic and not the unemployed statistic. And people in here are not passive. Members of the National Federation of the Blind are not passive. As was pointed out earlier, everybody in this room has a distinct advantage because you're part of the National Federation of the Blind, or if not, you know the National Federation of the Blind, and you can get information. There's many, many blind people in this country who don't have the information and who, are pretty much, sunk in despair and low self-expectations and so on and so forth. So the first thing we can do to improve the employment rate of blind people in this country is get more people into the National Federation of the Blind and get more people exposed to that. Now, do you think you could do that? Oh, come on. Do you think you can do that? Yes, yes. Okay. Just find a blind person to ask him. You know, we could double the attendance at the convention next year if everybody just asked another person to come. You know, so that's something. So we need to. That's one thing that we can do. Second thing that we can do is get good skills. And I'm going to talk about the NFB training centers in the afternoon, and so I'm not going to take your time up for that now. But you've got to have good skills. Employers are looking for people who meet their needs. Why does anybody hire somebody? It's because they have too much work to do. What are they looking at? Somebody to take the work off their shoulders. So a lot of blind people are conditioned to think, what's in it for me? A lot of blind people are conditioned to be dependent. And so that's another attitude that people need to change. Please, everybody, would you please listen here? We're having a little bit too much talking.
Too much interference that comes back. So could you guys please?
Yeah. Or if you want to step outside, that's cool too. I'm in favor of the First Amendment. Second Amendment too, by the way. But anyway, moving on. So preparation is good. You know, the way to keep from being a victim is to take steps to make yourself a non-victim. You know, get good adjustment to blindness training. You know, build up your attitudes, build up your skills. For heaven's sakes, go to a college that will train you in something that people want to hire from. I don't know why people still have this illusion, but a lot of people think if I can just get through college, I'll get a job. Not true. It's what you do on the way that's important. So you gotta first of all get training in something that people want to hire you for, and then second, you need to take advantage of all the opportunities, especially internships, very, very valuable, on-campus opportunities, and so on and so forth, because it's not the fact that you survived college by the skin of your teeth. It's what you did in college and what you can bring in the way of recommendations and so on and so forth. The other thing you need to do, and this is very, very important, is get a job, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. And I know a lot of people who are worried about losing SSDI and SSI, and I can maybe talk about that a little bit in the afternoon if we want. But essentially, Jim Gashel has talked about the earnings cliff for Social Security disability. Okay, so let's accept that for now. It doesn't keep you from getting a part-time job. As a matter of fact, it doesn't keep you from getting a low-paid full-time job as long as you make less than $1,820 a month. Do the math in your head. That's minimum wage times 40 hours a week, or you know, it's more than that right now. And every year, with the cost of living increase, it's going to go up. So even if you make more than that, you can work part time. Work is a habit. Please get into it. At Blind Incorporated in Minneapolis, we have a prep program. One of the young women in the audience who's been in the audience, who sings beautifully, by the way, excuse me, Simon, went last summer and got 3 weeks of paid employment and got a paycheck. And that means everything, you know, to a person. When you take that money home that you've earned, you know, out of your own labor, it makes a big difference, you know. And SSI tapers off. Now, most people don't know this, but I'm going to give you a link that will help you. But most people don't know this, but if you are a student up to the age of 21, a high school student, a college student, so on and so forth, you can make over $7,000 a year without it affecting your SSI a single bit. Most people don't know that. Why don't they know that? Because Social Security, while they've been working very, very hard on work incentives to get people to work, doesn't tell anybody about them. So you can't you know, get people to do something if you don't tell them, you know, what the plan is. And so Social Security, on the site, they have a link. It's called Social Security Red Book, REDBOOK, Red Book. And you can go on there and you can find out all the all the work incentives under Social Security, including this and other ones I'm talking about, and some of the things that Jim Gashel talked about, the blind work expenses and the impairment-related work expenses, you can see why the blind work expenses are a better deal, believe me. So basically, to summarize, Social Security disability, as long as you stay beneath the earnings cliff, you can work. SSI, as a general rule, since that tapers off, you can work. If you're a college student or a high school student under the age of 22, you can work. You know, all those things, you can work. So find something and don't get picky. You know, if you're a young person, believe me, I didn't grow up in management when I was in high school or in college for that matter. I did grunt work. Blind people need to do grunt work too, because that's the way you get work skills and then you do better work as you go on. So a lot of sometimes blind parents of blind kids say, oh, I don't want my kid working for minimum wage or working at a restaurant or whatever. Well, geez, that's the way the world works. You know, you got to go ahead and do that. So anyway, do that. Okay, shifting really quickly to job seeking skills. Again, a little bit of attitudinal work here. I ask my students in my careers class, and when I do presentations of this type, and when in the employment committee we run the National Job Seeker Seminar, I ask people two questions. Question number one: given all these sighted people with qualifications, wandering around in the world, why would anybody hire you as a blind person? Now, isn't that a terrible question? That's a really awful question. It's very rude and to the point. But you got to answer that question before you're going to get hired. Okay, so I could draw this out, but this is a short presentation, so I'm going to give you the answer. Blindness is not the trump card. You know, it's a trump card only if everybody is equal. But suppose you're a charming person, you know, excellent singer, brilliant person with great qualifications, and you're up against a sighted person that doesn't have your talent and your charming ability and your qualifications and so on and so forth. You're going to beat that person unless you're up against a complete redneck who is not going to hire blind people any way, shape, or form. And you don't want to be hired by people like that. They'll make your life miserable. You want to be hired by people who want to hire you, or you want to be hired by people who at least will give you a fair shake. You know, so just screen those people out. They don't want you. You don't want them. You know, just go away and find somebody. I would say in this day and age, which is a big change from when I started placing blind people 40 years ago, I would say 1/3 of employers will take you at face value, 1/3 will have to be convinced, and 1/3 there ain't nothing you can do about it. You know, so just deal with the 2/3 that you have half a chance with or full chance with. Okay, so second question is, why, as a blind person, are you a better person to hire than a sighted person? Now, nobody thinks that way except me and the people I've dealt with. Hopefully, a few of you have come up with this, but actually there are some advantages of being a blind person. Lots of sighted people these days have an easy go of it. You know, they don't have any challenges. What do you guys got? Challenges. Okay. What do challenges do? They make you stronger. They make you, they make you more determined. I am going to get a job. You know, I'm not going to have those sighted people walking all over me. I'm going to go and get a job. So, you know, it makes you stronger, you know, and tougher, you know, and ready to go. Do you think blind people are more organized than sighted people? I happen to. Are there blind people who are not organized? Oh, yes, but there are exceptions to everything. I think blind people tend to be more creative. They tend to think things through. Why? Because every single day for a blind person, you got the world set up for the sighted, so you got to figure out ways to get around in it and do things. So you come up with creative solutions. Does that make a smarter person? Yes, because problem solving is one of the main things in our life. Okay, I won't belabor this point, but I want everybody, when you go home tonight, if you're thinking of looking for a job, I want you to think about two things. What are all my assets, all the good reasons why people should hire me, and why am I better than anybody else that they could hire? Think about those two things. You're smart people. I'm sure you'll figure it out. Okay, one example of hiring. FedEx, SmartPost, and so a number of other companies, but FedEx for sure is, there's a 7% requirement. It's a goal for federal contractors to hire people with disabilities. Okay, who's a federal contractor? Just about everybody. I'm always amazed when business complains about federal funding because they get so much of it themselves. It's just so amazing. But anyway, they all have this requirement, and so FedEx called me up and said, "Hey, would you like to refer people to FedEx?" And that was, oh my God, I've never had this happen to me. I mean, I've had people call me up and they want me to support their affirmative action plan, which they all do, and then they don't hire anybody. But I've never actually had somebody call me up and want to hire people. So I took people there, and we went through an interview process. FedEx is great. If you want to go to work for FedEx, you have to take a tour of the plant first before they'll even let you apply. So you got to get off your backside, come in there, go through the plant, see if this is what you really want to do, and then you can apply. And so two of our people went through that. And then the manager took us out, and the beginning job there is unloading semi-trucks. And they were concerned about whether it would be safe for blind people. But they were honest. They were upfront about this. They fell into group two, the people who could use a little convincing. So they did that. And one of the things that they were concerned about is FedEx trucks have two levels. There's a top level, and then there's a bottom level in between the wheel wells. There's a floor that folds up. They wanted to know if a blind person could, you know, why a blind person wouldn't go rocketing into space because they stepped off the top level. Well, one of the things I was able to prove to him is that blind people tend to feel for things with their feet. And sighted people tend to look around and gaze and think, so if somebody's going to go rocketing into space, it's going to be a sighted person, not a blind person. So blind people are actually better to hire. They did that. And oddly enough, I had a partially blind person, Jim Gashel, you'll be interested in this story, and a totally blind person, and they hired the totally blind person because they thought the totally blind person was more realistic and more interested in the job, and he actually got up and tried the stuff. And the other guy sat back and observed, and he didn't put his hands on things, and that's kind of a lesson for everybody. You know, act interested, you know, and then they're going to be far more interested. Okay, what else can I do? Because I don't want to steal any more Byron's time. Networking. Most employers are looking at LinkedIn. Be on LinkedIn. Create a profile, kind of like a resume, and you can actually get people to put letters of recommendation on LinkedIn. Explore LinkedIn. The Employment Committee of the National Federation of the Blind has resources. You can reach us through the NFB website or through http://employment.nfb.org. And then there's a slash at the end. Make sure you put the slash at the end. Once again, http://employment.nfb.org/. Another site I like, which is free in many cases or otherwise has very inexpensive things, is Guerrilla Marketing for Job Hunters. That's international, and one of the headquarters is in Edina, Minnesota. And it's gm4jh.com, gm4jh.com, Guerrilla Marketing for Job Hunters. It's not like the animal gorillas, it's like the combat gorillas. As far as I know, all of their stuff is accessible, and we've been using it for students for years. And if you hook into their resume writing program, they guarantee if you don't get a job within a specific period of time, they will refund your money. And I like that. That's confidence. And we know about confidence in the National Federation of the Blind. And if somebody puts their money on the line and says, hey, you know, you follow our advice, you don't get a job, we give your money back, I happen to like that. So gm4jh.com, http://employment.nfb.org. And now I'm going to give you to Byron.
Good morning. Good morning. I need a reciprocation of energy when I'm speaking to a crowd. First off, I would like to thank Madam President Denise Avant, Patty Chang, anyone on the board for the Illinois affiliate of the NFB. This is an amazing opportunity to take this off the stand, if this is okay. This is an amazing opportunity for me to share with you all quite a few things in a very, very short amount of time. As well, before I move forward, man, it's a blessing to have a bureau chief now, someone that actually has a brain and in rehab services. And I'm not scared to say that loud, you know. I am a product of BBS. Yes, please put your hands together for Director Chief of the Bureau, Mr. John Gordon. I am a product of BBS. I came through. Once again, my name is Byron Harden. Let me start there. I came through back in 08, and I had a very lackluster experience for the first year and a half. I'm not even going to go into that. No need to, obviously. But to make a long story short, a very, very new counselor with some new ideas came to my place that I was actually in the middle of construction at that particular point in time. And it was a recording studio. And I was just asking her for assistance in being a security guard. I came in BBS as a high partial. And so I wanted to become a security guard because that was going to fund my passion, which was matching to my vocation, which is audio production. I am a producer and a studio engineer. So... and manager and live sound engineer. I'm not going to rifle that list, but so in any event, so we're sitting in the front room amongst maybe about 300 or 400 sheets of unused drywall and lumber and all kinds of materials. And maybe about 2 hours into the meeting, she said, "What is all of this materials?" And I said, "This is for my recording studio." And she said, "What? Where is that at?" I said, "It was right here." So we took a tour, took her in the back, and she was blown away. And from there, she sent me a self-employment questionnaire, which is basically a executive summary to a business plan. And I sent it back to her the next day, and which it takes a lot of people a lot of time to fill that out. Obviously, I had 3 business plans already in place at that time. And I want to say 3 months later, I received a grant, about $150,000 from the state of Illinois, Bureau of the Blind Services, which I think is the highest as far as self-employment goes from the state. So, well, thank you. I mentioned that because I want people to know that this is a strong possibility, right, for anybody who is passionate about the next level in their life. You have to go, not physically, but you have to go into your spiritual side, which is everything. Seek the need and then execute. Because I'm going to tell you something. Your first customer is a counselor, right? So you sell it to the counselor gets it. That counselor will go to bat just like my counselor went to bat. She didn't have to do too much because the lovely Jan Sherburn was the assistant bureau chief at the time that I was there. Betty Odom Davis, if any of y'all know who she is, she was the bureau chief, sought after. Mr. Gordon, you have your work cut out for you following that one. As well as Don Solon, adaptive technologist, these folks really, really went to bat for me heavily. My company is called IC Music, and that's the pronoun I, and C as a verb, S-E-E, music. And we are a vocational school for audio production and communication for the totally blind. So what we do is we teach any and everything dealing with audio production. DJs, live sound reinforcement, music therapists, podcasting, television production, studio engineering. I have a list of 25 job opportunities as far as audio production is concerned. I'm not even going to keep going down that list. Sound designing, video game curation, accessibility curation for national attractions like zoos and museums and national parks. When you go on a tour elevator, what do you hear? Third floor, you know, that's audio production. Somebody had to record that. And the fact of the matter is the reason I bring that up is because where we're looked at a lot of times just because of the name of the company and the school, we're looked at as a music school, and that's not the case. Although we do teach music lessons, that's an online component that we have. But in any event, we take audio production very seriously. Motion picture sound. The list, I'm going to just keep rifling them off as I go through this, what do you want to call it, speech, I guess, or presentation. But in any event, it's not the music business. The average pay in audio industry is mid-40s, which is not a whole heck of a lot, but you know, the upper end of it is 75K a year. The lower end of it is high 20s. So there is quite a bit, and in 2 years, I believe the opportunities for conventional employment has jumped about 50% in this particular industry. The cool thing about what we do is we don't train you to record in a recording studio. We teach you to do this from your home. All the production nowadays, from film to television to radio, voiceover artistry, people are doing this in their underwear in their bedroom and sending the file to London, to New York, to LA, to these markets. The curators get it, they put it in place, they produce it the way they want it, they send you your money via PayPal, via direct deposit, whatever you want. Voila. No gas burnt, you're saving the environment, you're doing a whole bunch, right? You're getting paid, you're paying bills. So I say that to say this makes sense on a whole lot of levels. The opportunity for self-employment is to me, I couldn't do conventional employment. It's not a possibility. For you know, but I'm getting off my outline. I had an outline, but Jan and Dick kind of spoke to some things on it, which, you know, obviously. I had a thousand other things that I could say, and I think I'm going to say those things because I think it's necessary.
Do you want to take questions? Do you want to take questions?
I'm gonna take questions in a second. But one of the main points I wanted to make was before I start taking questions is going to rehab services as I did. Self-employment wise, I'm just thrilled that the opportunity does exist. If they did it for one person, obviously they'll do it for another. They have to by law, right? And if it's justifiable, we got to remember that. I think a lot of blind people are lazy, and it's probably more of a habit more than the natural state, right? So they're taught to be lazy. The system, they're systematically taught to be lazy. And it's a pretty unfortunate thing. And it's because you put the limitation on someone, then automatically they're going to do what? They're going to comply. So, myself, after being $350,000 invested into my own business, BBS comes along with $150,000, which I can't lie, it helped, right? But it wasn't the bell of the ball. It was something that obviously aesthetically put me into a place that I wasn't going to be at first. So what I did was I put together, for instance, a list of potential customers that I had, and I had them write letters of intent for me to come in and do work for them. I had a lot of customers in New York, a lot of clients in LA, a lot of clients in Atlanta, a lot of clients in Miami, and I was mixing records for them. I mixed every single last one of Chris Brown's records before he got signed, and that's how he got signed off the records that I mixed. Trey Songz as well, this Mark Kelly stuff. So it's quite a bit of underground stuff that happened for me. And I had these letters of intent from these different clients. And that showed BBS that, hey, maybe this guy is really legit. You know, he's not really playing around here. Obviously, researching a business plan. I had three of them done by that particular point in time. It's always good to research the market, research the things that it takes to make that market make sense. Identify the market and the needs of it, obviously. I had been working since the mid-90s. I started off as a landscaper, and everything that I did was to fill the passion, the audio production. So I always had a means to the end. So even, I think Dick just spoke to it, if you don't want to work at McDonald's, so what? Go do it. Because guess what? There's a next step. You know, so it's always a process that's around. I know my time is super limited, so I am going to take some questions if there are any.
Okay, do we have any questions for either Dick or Byron? Can we get her a mic?
So first of all, I just wanted to commend you for that, because I think that it's great that you totally just like followed your dream and did what you want to, because there's a lot of people out there that say, oh, you want to do this, it's not realistic, so don't do it. But I wanted to know, what was like the turning point for you? What was the point where you like, okay, like I know this is happening for me. Like like you realized that your dream was going to come true. You were going to be able to produce and make music. Like, what was that point for you in your life when you realized that? How did you know?
When individuals started investing in me, that's when I knew. Like,
so that encouragement like definitely helps you. And like, do you just reach out to certain people and like network? Is that how you got yourself out there?
Well, for me, what I did is I lived on the East Coast for 20 years and of my life, and I moved to New York the year before 9/11, and a gentleman saw my passion the previous year. My band, we went and we did a gig in New York City, and we had to sell CDs to get the gas money because we paid to actually play this particular gig. And so we had to pay $150 to travel 5 hours to play in front of three people. And so we had to sell CDs in order to get gas money to get the van back to Richmond, Virginia. And it was a gentleman that came by, and he bought 100 CDs, and that's all we had bought was 100 CDs. And sort of following year, I moved in his apartment with him. And he taught me production for the next 2 years heavily. So things like that, well, that's what I mean by people investing, not necessarily monetarily. But another piece to self-employment is you have to have a support team that's incredible. I don't care if it's your mom, which is, for me, it's my mom. My mother is unbelievable, okay? So if it's your mom, your dad, your sister, your boyfriend, your husband, whoever, even if you're a husband with a husband, that person can do it too, right? So, yeah, when people started investing in me and giving me tools to do what I had to do.
I just think that's great how you went from landscaping to, like, following your dream. Because being a singer myself, I've been out there and I've heard all the stereotypes of, like, you know, like, people aren't going to make it. They're not going to be able to do these things. But, yeah, like, that's amazing how much courage
But you got to remember, too, like, landscaping was a means to for me to do what I wanted to do, right? So, because, like, I knew this from day one. I tore plenty of cardboard boxes. I went to ISVI. I have an interesting sight loss story, like probably 99% of people in here. But I lost my sight twice in my life. And the first time was at 7 years old, and I went to ISVI. And me and a gentleman there, we started a little band. And I tell you, the Lincoln Logs and the Tonka Trucks and the Blocks, we broke every last one of them. But the cottage parents allowed for us to sit out on the sidewalk and play for people walking by on a day-to-day basis. And I accredited a lot of me going this way to the Miss Henrys of the world and the Chiltons and Mr. Cox and Miss Zimmerman's and Miss Taylor's. These are people that were cottage parents, that my cottage parents, and they just let us sit out there and play after dinner. And it was quite the experience.
We can take one more question. Does anybody have another question for either Dick or Byron?
Okay. Hey, hello. Hey, Byron, it's Andy Slater. How are you?
Oh, Mr. Slater, how you doing?
Sorry. Hey, I didn't want to sidetrack everything away from the fact that you provide a service that I think a lot of us might be interested in getting into, with your audio engineering classes and your studio and such. And I went to school, the Art Institute for sound design and engineering and things. And I graduated, and I've been trying to get support and funding from my counselor at BBS, who doesn't seem to understand what I do, which is a lot like what Byron has done. And I wanted to know if there's any steps or anybody in the state or any funding like that that could help anybody here interested in taking classes with you and learning through your program and your business, if we're able to access any of that stuff or if we should push for any of that.
I'm sure there's a few people in here that probably can shoot some answers, but I got a two-part answer, and they're really short. One is a program that's being revamped, and they won't let us comply with their new policy until January the 1st, but it's I think it's WIOA or something like that, which is funding for vocational schools, which is what we are. And they will help fund, and this is through the Chamber of Commerce, they will help fund individuals to attend a vocational entity such as ours.
You said you had a second part to
that? Oh, and then the next part to that is obviously Bureau of the Blind is is an option. I'm not putting the pressure on Mr. Gordon at all, but it is a difference having an advocator in that particular bureau now, so things. Mr. Slater, you and I, we've been talking for the past year trying to get you in the program. And this program is not cheap, everybody. I mean, you know, it's no secret. I mean, it's $22,400 on a 7-week, but it's 224 instructional hours, so it's pretty heavy. It's super intense. It's a 6-module program, but it's accessibility at its finest, at the latest and greatest technology. And
right.
So yeah.
Thank you, Dick. Thank you, Byron, for this presentation. They are here and will be available. Marco, can I get a door prize, please?